now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
It's that time of the week again when you get your ears filled with rainbow.
Now there's a thought.
This week,
Barkley Wild, over 3 decades of helping others. Steffi chats to Barkley, plus even more stuff it says here.
All in the next hour on Shout Out.
Shout Out.
Do you want to do it
what
again?
What the hell are you doing, Steffi?
Yeah, it went backwards instead of forwards.
I think at the RADA, I called that seamless.
Yeah, exactly. I thought so
absolute
as well.
Absolute seamless.
Look, by the time I've edited it and taken out, no one will know. Okay.
Do, 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 do. It's very quiet in the background, so I had to really concentrate to hear the... That's that bit, yeah. Thank you, Steffi.
Is that loud enough in your ears?
Yes, she's old now, love.
I know.
Anyway,
creaking.
How are we all on this glorious but cold Thursday? And it dropped
it
off
is
mind.
It's cold. It did drop off.
It's dropped right off, hasn't it? Christ
yeah.
alive.
As they say in Bristol, yes, absolutely.
I was sat on
chilly. There could be a ground frost tonight. If you're listening live on a Thursday, ground frost from Thursday into Friday.
No, see, that ain't never right. We're just in
Be
September,
early,
do you know what I mean?
You
I
sounded just like Sam Gamgee.
That ain't never right. Potatoes, fry them, mash them, stick them in a stew. No, I was sat on my sofa earlier, catching up with the final episode of Selling Sunset, and I was thinking, oh, I'm going to need me hot water bottle. And then I was like, oh, it's going to get to that time where I'm going to have to get me Lecky blanket out, aren't I?
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. It is.
Have you got a powered blanket, have you?
It's a Lecky blanket. Everyone has a Lecky blanket. Yeah. It's a vision. During lockdown, when we all had to work from home and we had to pay for our own eating, I bought from an online shop provider that offers next day delivery. I ordered an heated mouse.
What, for your hand?
For my hand.
Ooh.
Because me typing hand was getting exercise, so I was having a lovely gorgy time with me left because I was tapping away on my keyboard. But me scrolling hand on me mouse was getting frozen to me mouse. I was looking like a little old lady that's got arthritis. So I bought...
A bit like me then.
So I bought a heated mouse. There's a little button under the mouse and it heats it up. Vision.
How spoiled are you?
It changed my life. Honestly, anybody that suffers with really cold hands, and if anybody who's touched my hands knows I've got the touch of death, a heated mouse.
Hang on, listeners, I'm
going to
check. Oh, yeah. The
freezing.
Tips are cold.
I could say something about that, but anyway, moving on. How are we all?
No, you're right. It has gone colder.
No one wants a cold tip.
No, they don't.
No, especially not in September. Expect that kind of thing later on in the year.
I'm thinking that maybe we should move on, don't you?
Oh, are we going straight into it? Have we done enough of tots, have we?
Well, yeah. What do you want to talk
about? Oh, yeah, we are
a
little bit over. Never mind. We'll save it for the zoo.
Yeah.
Technical term for the end bit.
Shout out. LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Track for you there, Alid.
Thank you, Steffi.
And
thank
yes.
you.
Terry, starter for 10, where's that from?
From?
Yeah.
It's from the soundtrack to Queer as Folk, we were saying, off of the
certainly
British
is.
Original Channel 4
a certain,
adaptation.
A certain generation's heartstopper, I would say. It was definitely my heartstopper, Queer as Folk, especially episode one in that opening, like in one of the...
It was radical for its day.
Oh,
it was
more,
very radical.
Yeah, more hardcore than heartstopper. I mean, it was near
but
the
like,
knuckle. No, it was
in,
beyond
like,
the knuckle, wasn't it?
But back then, the gays were just all about sex and shame, weren't we? Now we can actually find true love. Back then, it was just war, men with men.
I mean, Russell T. Davies came in for a lot of stick for it. You know, I mean, this is long before he was involved in Doctor Who or things like that. But he did say, we have to be able to write about villainous gay people, or less pleasant gay people as well, or else it's not a fair representation.
It came into a lot of stick as well because obviously it was in the 90s, so like HIV would have been absolutely everywhere, to be honest. And it was in Manchester, filmed on Canal Street, you know, it would have been a thing, but it was never mentioned during the show. And that's what his motivation was so much for in doing It's a Sin, was because he felt like he'd missed it out during Queer as Folk.
Yeah, sort of redress the balance a little bit. And It's a Sin is fantastic, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a great series.
Right, moving on.
Yes,
I had a chat with Barclay and his 30 years of helping.
30? She's not old enough.
This next guest has been working in equality, diversity and inclusion for over 3 decades. Quite incredible. Previously worked at Relate, Mind Out, Terence Higgins Trust, Department of Health, All-Party Parliamentary Group on Men's Health, and European Men's Health Forum in Brussels. Wow. Berkeley Wilde, welcome to Shout Out.
It's an absolute joy and pleasure to be here, and you made me feel rather ancient.
Well, you don't actually look ancient. I know the listeners can't see you, but I can at the moment.
Google me.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Now, let's go back to growing up and that. What was it like growing up as a kid? Did you have an inkling that you just were there to help others?
That's a fantastic question. And it reminds me of a lot of work that I did as a child, campaigning. You know, there was campaign for nuclear disarmament. There was Greenpeace. There was Save the Dolphins, Save the Whale. You know, I was an activist from literally when I could eat solid foods, knee high. I was an activist. I was out raising money, going to kind of actions and attending events and festivals. Yeah. So it's been a lifelong thing. And I think what happened for me was I got a real sense of social justice. I think that came from my mum and from my grandparents. And I think that's something that was instilled in me in a very young age. And I saw a lot of what was wrong in the world. And interestingly, someone on a local radio program 30 odd years ago said to me, well, if you'd achieved everything, if all your, you know, goals had been won, would you still be campaigning? Would you still be doing the work? And I'd be like, yeah, because there's so much wrong in the world.
Yeah, that's quite incredible. Were you a school monitor when you were?
How did you guess? How did you guess? Of course. I don't think I quite made head boy, but I was certainly a prefect. Although, do you know what? I used to love hanging out. I mean, I grew up in Kingswood. I'm a homeboy from the region, from Bristol. And I absolutely loved my childhood there. And I escaped in the drama and music department. That was my respite. That's where I found solace. And I always remember, I used to play the cello when I was a kid. And I always remember, before I was a prefect, I was in there one break time and the prefects came in and like, who are you? What are you doing? Why are you in here? And I literally had the cello like between my legs with my bow. And they said, right, play us something to prove that you can play. So I played and they were like, okay, yeah, you're fine. You can play.
I tell you what, Barclay, is quite incredible. Before we started the chat, we mentioned that we have toast, peanut butter on toast for our morning breakfast. And, you know, I've been eating that since the year dot, since I was on solid food. You've just mentioned that at school you were learning the cello. So did I.
Did you?
How weird is that?
But did you used to walk to school carrying your cello? Oh, my God.
No,
I used to walk.
Luckily,
I used to walk to school.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. They're not the smallest of things, are they?
Getting the bus was the upgrade.
Yeah, yeah.
Sitting on the back of the bus with your cello.
Yeah, like I said, I was lucky that mine was already at the school. And if people are not sure what a cello is, it's about 5 times the size, maybe bigger than a violin. Similar sort of structure. But here's the thing, Barclay. I didn't get past the plucking phase before giving it up. Because all I wanted to do was play with the bow and thought that within a few weeks I'd be an expert and that. But no, you had to pluck the thing first.
So, do you know, I don't remember the plucking phase.
Oh, don't you? Oh, okay. Maybe different teachers, different methods, I guess.
Obviously, yeah. But no, I really loved it. And I played piano a bit as well. And yeah, I used to write songs and I was in a band. But everyone always says, what was the band's name? I can't remember. I remember writing hundreds of songs. I mean, I was, yeah, it was my creativity. I came from a really artist background, both my mum and dad are artists. And I just didn't pick that up. It was always music for me. But then I found boys and then it all went horribly wrong.
Were your mum and dad and family supportive?
Interesting question. My mum, 100%. Although my only regret with my mum is that she wouldn't let me tell my grandparents, and that was sad because I lost them in the late 80s, early 90s. But it's all fine. I'm okay with it now. My dad, I mean, I can't use the expletives on the radio, but you know, we're talking severe levels of homophobia, sadly. He's mellowed over the years and he's had a really tough time because we lost my brother when he was 30 to a brain tumor a few years ago. So that was incredibly sad. But yeah, my relationship with my dad has not been very good, sadly.
Have you always been in the industry, inverted commas, that you are now, helping people? Have you always done that, or was there an interim career move for you?
Oh, now we're getting there. There might have been. I was a hairdresser and barber for a little while back in the day. And yeah, I used to have a business up in Clifton in the late 80s, early 90s. Do you know what? The lovely thing about that experience was it took me all over the world. I got to go and live in Sydney in Australia. I traveled in New Zealand and it was fantastic. It was such a portable skill. I do remember landing in Sydney and applying for a job. And one of the first questions was, well, do you speak Mandarin? And I was like, no, sorry. So that was no good. But no, I absolutely loved it. And what happened was I was a bit of a late starter. I had an 8-year gap year instead of a year gap year, travel the world, did my hairdressing and barbering, and then came back to Bristol in the very early 90s and read social policy and sociology. And during that time, when I was studying, I found the Allied Richards Trust and was a volunteer there for the HIV charity. And that was the start of my career. And my career really began in 1994, 95. So it is, yeah, as you say, 30 years.
Yeah, indeed. Quite an incredible tenure of time to be in an industry that's just out for helping others. Yeah. So let's look at how you climbed through those ranks through the decades. You've just said where you started. And so let's go on to where you are now.
So I've been running an organization called the Diversity Trust for 12 years. Prior to that, for about 8 years, I was a sole trader. So I was self-employed, doing exactly the same work that I do now. And that had been after a 10, 12-year career in health inequalities. You already mentioned Mind and Relate and Terence Higgins Trust and the Department of Health and other projects I'd worked on. That was all that time period through the 90s and noughties. And then in 2004, so I've just recently celebrated my 20-year anniversary of working specifically in diversity and inclusion. And then 12 years ago, along with two other people, I set up the Diversity Trust, and we've been running for 12 years as a social enterprise. And then back in 2017, we became a KIC, a community interest company. And we've been thriving ever since. And now I'm the chief executive of that organization. And I have an amazing team. We have 6 non-executive directors who help me sort of with the strategy and steer the organization. There's 17 staff. We have a number of subcontractors and a whole team of volunteers. And I'm just going to do a quick plug because we're always on the lookout for volunteers. So if people are interested, please just have a look at my website, which is diversitytrust.org.uk. Got that one in.
You did. Well, I was going to ask you that later in the chat, but you've sorted it now. Now, currently you're living abroad, aren't you?
Well, if you call Scotland abroad.
Well, it's north of Hadrian's Wall, and you know that from Bristol, anything north of Cheltenham, it doesn't exist. So yeah, you've proved that there is something north of Cheltenham.
Yeah, I escaped. It was a weird COVID thing for me. My husband has Scottish ancestry. I have Welsh. Don't hold that against me. And he was pining, I could tell. And he lived on Skye. And I had this idea that we were going to go and, you know, live on the Isle of Skye and we'd live on a croft. And I'd be like, beaming into places here, there, and everywhere from my digital, you know, isolation. And that didn't land very well because I cannot live with midges. Midges love me, and I only have to step out in the summer months, and I'm literally on a calm day when there's no wind, I'm just literally attacked. So we ended up in the Northeast. He got a job here, and literally I was able to lift my laptop up, put it down, and relocate anywhere. So that's worked really well for us. So we opened up an office here. So we've got office space in London, office space up in Aberdeenshire, where I live. And most of the people that I manage work remotely. So they work from home. Big community of people in the Bristol area. I think there's about 8-10 people of the team that are based in that area. So we haven't lost our roots, which were very much based in the West Country.
Mm. It's nice to know you're actually now international.
Yeah, it was an interesting time for us during COVID. We had obviously everything went online, and we reacted really quickly to that, and so we were able to continue to work and trade. And suddenly, audiences opened up for us all over the world. And I was on a call doing some training with an organization who worked in kind of financial security, cybersecurity. And they were in, people were waking up in the morning in the US at about 7:30 a.m. They were joining the call. It was kind of midday for me. In Europe, it was sort of early afternoon. And then we had some people in Asia who were going to bed just at the end of the call. And all of a sudden, it just meant that we could reach much, much bigger audiences, whereas previously it had been, you know, Bristol, Southwest, West of England, that sort of region. And all of a sudden, the whole world was open up to our conversations, which was phenomenal. And then, of course, what happened at the same time was, you know, COVID was March 2020, and then George Floyd was murdered in May 2020. And when you have an organization called the Diversity Trust, and all of a sudden everyone's waking up to the need to do work around diversity, they're like looking around for an organization that can support them. So yeah, that really had an impact on us, quite a significant one.
So not only do you help individuals, but you help companies and corporations as well.
Yeah, so we do a number of different programs. So we have training that we deliver to organizations, large and small, all different. We work with really small, like non-profit charities at a local level. We do quite a lot of work in like public sector with local authorities, health, NHS, education, schools, etc. Quite a lot of university clients. And then we also work with private sector, so with companies, large and small. We've got, I think, 4 or 5 multinational kind of tech companies that we work with, a couple that we're working with right at the moment. And then we also, as well as all of that, we also deliver very localized specialist services, which are majority for LGBTQ plus communities. But we do have up in Aberdeenshire, where I'm based, we do have a project that supports refugee and asylum seekers. So we do work around mental health here, but we also do quite a lot of youth work. And that's particularly what we're known for in the Southwest, particularly around Bristol, South Gloucestershire, that sort of area.
Mm. Now, if people want to get in touch, so you've obviously got a website and social medias. So if you could just run through that for us, Barclay.
Yeah, so the website is diversitytrust.org.uk. Yeah, please do visit the site. And then all of our social media is at Diversity Trust. We're currently active on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. Controversial question around what we do with X, formerly known as Twitter, but anyway, that's a whole other debate. But yeah, we're certainly on the majority of those platforms as at Diversity Trust, and people can just get in touch and they can drop us an email or send a message.
Yep. Now, this is not the last of this subject, because we got a few of your team actually coming into the studio, and we booked them in for October for further chats about the Diversity Trust and the great work that you do. But for now, Barclay Wild, thank you so much for joining us at Shout Out. It's been a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Steph.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
Oh, so-
what a belter of a track.
Woo, love that one.
That's a great song. Absolute belter, banger, tune.
I'm amazed that you bopped around the studio and you never hit one knob.
It's because you're in control of the knobs today, Steffi.
And the sliders.
And the buttons.
I prefer the sliders.
You are pushing and sliding and twiddling all sorts over that side of the desk, aren't you, my darling?
Yeah. I only do that to make it look good.
I was going to say
like
something.
Like I know what I'm doing.
But I'll get a complaint. But that is a great song.
Isn't it?
It is.
It is.
And the next one's a banger as well.
Yeah, you've got some absolute joyous tunes on this one today. Not
and
gonna lie.
Terry, are you ready for some news?
I think the team is. This is Shoutout News. Welcome along.
We've got some great news to report from the oldest Aussie gay newspaper, the Sydney Star Observer. Palawa man Jonathan Berry has made history in 2024 as the first Aboriginal man to win the title of Mr. Universe. An out gay man, Berry has been a trailblazer in the pageant world, and his recent victory marks another significant milestone in his impressive journey. Reflecting on his victory, Berry expressed his gratitude and pride, stating that he couldn't be prouder or more grateful to join the prestigious family of title holders in the beauty pageant world. This year was Berry's first foray into the Mr. Universe competition, and he seized the opportunity to showcase his cultural heritage on a global stage. I can't wait to bring this home to you all and start my reign. It's going to be a wild time, and I'm so excited to model around the world and share the beauty of Australia, he said.
Trotskyist monthly newspaper Workers' Power says that Bristol's anti-fascist movement needs to learn lessons from the successful mobilisations against far-right thugs that took place in August. An activist writing in issue 414 of the newspaper says the counter-demonstration showed that many people were prepared to mobilise at short notice, but it also showed that we would need better organisation and more numbers to stop pogrom-style attacks on refugees. A weakness was the absence of Bristol's large Muslim community, which mostly failed to turn out. The police, using their links with community leaders, were able to transmit a stay-at-home message. Whilst many Muslims did come out locally to defend their own communities, most did not attend the counter-demonstration. The activist went on, the left needs to build links that can go around leaders who will often be more conservative and more easily swayed by the police than by us. This kind of work takes months and years, not weeks. There were also some serious weaknesses of the organisation on the day. Even considering the short notice the Stand Up to Racism coalition had, there was no apparent plan to organise people when they arrived. Despite the high likelihood of violence, there was no attempt to coordinate defence of the demonstration, let alone the hotel. Given that they had called the protest at the exact location several hundred violent racists were expected to congregate, this was irresponsible. Coming face to face with the far right, many of us concluded that even with twice the numbers, we were not going to be able to outfight them on their own terms. These are, after all, hardened thugs whose idea of fun is to get drunk, take cocaine and start fights. To succeed, the person concluded, we need to overwhelm them. Now, Gloucester Road Books, part of a whole network of progressive, LGBTQIA+ friendly and independent bookstores across Bristol, is looking for a part-time salesperson and someone to get fully involved in the life of the bookstore. Does this sound like you? If so, please have a read of the Precy and get in touch with them. This is an opportunity to join their small team of booksellers on a year-round, permanent basis. They're looking for 8 to 20 hours per week as regular shifts, plus additional hours working at events such as the busy Christmas trading period. Some Saturdays are essential, but timings of other shifts and numbers of hours worked per week are negotiable for the right candidate. They're looking for someone who loves books and is happy talking about them. The role involves contributing to pretty much everything that happens in the shop, from working the till to shelving books, placing orders for customers, contributing to newsletters and social media, helping to run events and book groups, planning new title ordering, selecting books for subscription, reordering books, cleaning and organising. Eventually, it will entail working alone in the shop, but only once enough training and experience has been accrued and everyone feels comfortable.
Forget Oasis next year. Coldplay are living a life of kindness and resilience, says Mira Lazine at LGBTQ Nation Newswire. At a recent concert in Dublin, front person Chris Martin spotted a transgender man holding up a sign which read, "Trans fan, Coldplay saved my life. It's my dream to come on stage." Chris did just that, and the young man called James and he briefly spoke about the sign. James detailed how the band had saved his life through their music, to which Martin said, "You saved my life. It's the same. It works both ways, I'm afraid. We need you as much as you need us." James then requested that they play their 2014 hit, Magic. A beautiful video shows him on stage with Martin as the two sing together. The stadium erupted in cheers of support. Martin and Coldplay as a whole have expressed their support for LGBTQ plus people previously. They've been spotted waving the LGBTQ plus flag at public events, and during the song People of the Pride, Martin was draped in a rainbow pride flag. The song has been adopted by some as an anthem for gay rights.
In business reports, Devonair, a local radio station based in Exeter, has good news for LGBTQIA plus fans of the eco-business chain The Body Shop, which was founded by queer ally, the late Dame Anita Roddick, in 1976. The 130 shops remaining in the chain have been saved after the purchase of the brand by an investment fund. The BBC News Channel took up the story, noting that some 1,000 jobs have been saved as a result of the purchase. The specialist investment firm Aurea Group will also gain control of the Body Shop's assets in Australia and North America in a deal which was finalised late on Friday. The former chief executive of Molton Brown, Charles Denton, will take over the helm as CEO. "I'm truly excited to lead this brand, which I have admired for many years," Mr. Denton said. He added that bold action will be required to achieve a sustainable future. And finally, artist Ian Giles is a student of countercultures and recently curated an exhibition about these squatting communities of the 70s and 80s on Brixton's Railton Road. home to anarchist bookshops and at one point the activist pirate radio station Our Radio, which beamed out on Wednesday evenings in 1982 radical news and information, including a gay magazine programme, before the authorities had it closed down. Now, reports the Guardian newspaper, Ian has persuaded a hippie rock collective, who recorded the first gay rights anthem in the UK, to reform for a new recording of the song by the group Everybody Involved. Now the anthem has been re-recorded by the original members of the group as part of an exhibition of the same name by Ian Giles. A film of the recording session, when the band reunited at RAK Studios in London, is currently screening at Southampton's Godhouse Tower alongside wall hangings by the artist. The hand-stitched quilts and cartoon-like paintings pay decorative tribute to the early queer rights movement, but also creating an intimate, cosy feeling for the audience. Mr. Giles says that such intergenerational dialogue continues beyond the work and inspires him in his own projects. Making the film, he discovered that the members of Everyone Involved are the same radical hippies that they were in the 70s. "Sometimes activists become more straight-edged as they get older, but," he said, "actually, in a great way, they've all had these wonderful, creative lives." Well, that's Shoutout News for another week. Do check out our website for further stories at shoutoutradio.lgbt. For Shoutout News, this has been Arby and Terry Starr.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
It's like they're in the room. I reckon you could do this all night.
Such a song. Absolute iconic. Legendary.
Brilliant song.
Like
Takes me back.
The group is called Titania. Titania.
Titania. Are they Italian?
Congrats on curating such a wonderful playlist today.
Thank you.
Yes, it's been brilliant, yeah.
The tunes have been top tier.
I realise that.
They've been taking
Chef's
us
kiss,
back.
Some would say.
Yes.
But we used to listen to those, like in Club 46 and Castro's at the bottom of Old Market Street. Yeah.
I can't believe that I never bumped into you because
I think we probably did. We squeaked past each other.
I was going to say something, but I won't.
The days when I was wearing rubber on the scene and not looking like a stuffed sausage.
Oh.
Which I would do these days. Like a black pudding.
I was going to say there'll be a couple of stuffed sausages, my dear.
That might indeed, but those were the days.
As the kids would say now, if you've seen those, when you get a Gen Z to write your marketing script, that was a sleigh.
It was a sleigh.
That was.
Hard sleigh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hard sleigh.
Hard sleigh.
Absolutely. Is it Gen Z that can't make decisions?
Probably.
I mean, come on. Like, you know, I think this country's filled with people who can't make decisions.
There's a lot of indecisive people around there. I'm not going to lie to you in that. Like, people just don't know what they want anymore.
No.
I'm not sure about that.
Controversial.
Well, we were talking about bringing back the late night in-depth discussion magazine version of Shout Out called After Dark, which some of our more long-standing listeners will remember we used to do. And
a requirement for that show is amor.
Now that would be good.
And every
so wine often, and amor
and like halfway through an interview, I'll just say hit.
That would change the interview radically, wouldn't it? But it's been done before, hasn't it? That kind of
quick fire round, like a pop-off question, like a five-minute interview with someone whilst they're taking a hit. Well, in between each question.
Do you think that yesterday's chat with Harrison Trump, he was on poppers?
No, he's never loose enough.
I'm sorry, dear. No, that is.
He's permanently that orange. It's not popper juice.
No, you go blue. You tend to look like a Smurf on a bit of the poppers, which I absolutely is my favourite shade of colour.
But did you hear that he's been watching The Simpsons? Okay, they're in Springfield, right? And he said he saw on the telly that people were eating animals and it was immigrants. They weren't Americans. So these immigrants were eating Americans' pets.
Yes.
What?
Is that what he said?
Yeah, he said they're eating your cats, they're eating your dogs, they're coming over here and eating your pets. And he's never going to let that down because we live in a world of social media. Honestly, within 30 seconds of him saying that, the videos that were appearing on my TikTok were incredible. Absolutely incredible. Like, they've put that sound, they're laying on bed, somebody's got a cute little dog, and then they start playing that sound, and obviously somebody's doing something else, and the dog is like looking around as if to say, what the hell is this person saying? It's been remixed to some like boppy music, and people are like dancing. Like, honestly, it's been absolutely golden. Those reasons are why I love the internet.
Indeed. Yeah, he was just spooked by Harris all the way through, really. She was goading him and he bit.
Well, she's been doing weeks of prep, hasn't she? Like day in, day out.
One of my favourite comments was when she turned around and was like, I'm going to say something now and I'm going to ask you all to do something, which you wouldn't usually hear me say, but I am asking you all to go and attend a Donald Trump rally. Because he'll mention fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter, he'll mention this, people halfway through are leaving because they're bored and it's just going on too long, and you will never hear him talking about you.
Yeah.
You will only ever hear him talking about himself.
Yeah. And China.
I was like, snap, Steve-er. You got
it. It's certainly not a foregone conclusion, isn't it? Which some people were concerned about, that the American election would yield another Trump term in which, you know, under which he'd be more vindictive and more nasty than ever before. But it's still very tight, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, so
maybe that's why they need some poppers.
Back to poppers.
It is quite a tight race. And she is actually ahead in some of the swing
in
states
polls,
now. She is polling. Yeah. She is inching ever so far
still
ahead.
Doing a good campaign.
But did you hear today, Taylor Swift yesterday came out and endorsed Kamala Harris. And when she was at the VMAs, she said, which the MTV Music Video Awards, she said, now I'm going to ask you to vote for something that is more important than what you've just voted for me to win this award, and that is to go and register to vote. But then some Republicans have come out and they've said that women are more easily led two endorsements. And because of that, they're not making their own mind. So do they actually have the right to vote?
What?
Yeah.
So the arguments that were going on 100 years ago, 120 years ago, about whether women should vote are being resurrected by Donald Trump.
Because apparently women are more open to propaganda messages. Somebody like Taylor endorsing Kamala Harris.
You know, he attracts the evangelical vote, doesn't he? And if you see some of their posts that women should not be voting, women should be kept down. Women should be, in fact, a bit like Afghanistan. They shouldn't be educated because the Bible says this, the Bible says that. It's
They're called the evangelical Taliban for a reason, aren't they? Those sorts of groups. So, yeah, but they are hopefully fringe.
Some of this stuff that you can make up, like in the debate, he was saying that in some states, women are aborting their babies at 9 months and after they're born. And I'm like,
born.
You can't abort a baby when it's after they're born. That's just called murder at that point. And there is no woman on record that has decided to abort her baby at 9 months, dear. But it was hilarious because, like, the moderators, so, like, Trump has now come out and said that obviously it was rigged. All of this, la la la. Kamala has cheated because she got to review the questions first, and she was able to review them. And it's like, it's a presidential debate. The questions are usually the same every 4 years. This happens.
Did you see that he went to the spin room after?
Yeah, and then it was. Oh, you've lost me train of thought now. You interjected me, Steffi Barnett.
Sorry. Reading the questions, Kamala read them first, then he was upset.
It will come to me.
Spin room. Is that where you just go and spin round in circles?
No, it's full of the press.
He never goes in there
to meet the press straight after, because he's usually okay and confident, but he wasn't this time.
Right.
So he powered in to see the press to say, I've won that debate. And he was saying some really weird stuff. Of course, everyone after the assessments were out through all the press, they've all agreed that
Kamala won.
He lost big time because she baited him
so much.
He was riled every single one, but he's so easy.
He turned around and was like, "Yeah, I got interrupted more than she did. That's not fair." And everybody's like, "Well, no, you said that they eat pets," and the moderators of the debate was like, "That's never happened. That doesn't happen." And they were like instantly fact-checking him whilst he was saying this stuff, like 9 months they're having an abortion. And again, the moderators were like, "There's no reported cases of that." And he's like, "Yes, but I've seen it." And they're like, "That is not true." And because they were actually like on the spot fact-checking, which they would do for Kamala if she said something that was a lie.
Yeah.
And it was obvious fact-checking as well. It's not like they had to wait for him to finish his answer and then get a minion to go and Google it to see whether it was true. It's
he does
like
want to do another
blatant.
One, though, but he wants it to be done in front of Fox News moderators.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
It's...
Yes, Ez.
Do you think that he thinks that everything he says is the truth?
Or no, because there was that interview earlier, was it, like, from years and years ago when he was just some, like, person with pretend money and he went on to a game show and somebody was like, "Oh, what would you like, would you ever run, like, if you were to run for office, what party would you choose?" And he turned around and said the Republicans, because they'll believe anything.
Yeah, absolutely. He also said he'd date his own daughter, so
oh yes,
yeah,
who's, I mean, 10
make good choices.
10.
What's he been diagnosed with? Because several psychiatrists have said, in their opinion, is it a psychopath or a sociopath?
Narcissist with antisocial personality.
That's the one.
Polite way of saying psychopath.
You know there's a professional in the room, don't you? When there's words used that are more than 5 letters.
And a couple of syllables. Yeah.
They didn't sit with him. They observed him. So he didn't have a one-on-one.
No, of course not. Not a psychiatric evaluation.
You know, his history and his recent and... recent behaviours. Yeah, I mean, his own niece has said this.
Right. Over half of his previous cabinet have already come out and said, "I am not voting for Donald Trump because he's a danger." And these are like the Secretary of Defence, the Secretary of the Military, the top ranked military officer, and other members of his previous cabinet have all turned around and said,